sole authority of Jesus Christ, you may contact the Church at Kaweah by calling 559-561-4860. That's 559-561-4860. And let them know how much you're being blessed. Thank you.
In 1928, Germany required its citizens to register their firearms, making possible Hitler's 1938 Nazi Weapons Act, disarming all Jews. Now ask yourself, what is the real consequence of registration? All in favor of gun control, raise your right hand. Brought to you by Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, America's aggressive civil rights organization, jpfo.org.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn. Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed now? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget!
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Wednesday. It is the last day of our broadcast week. It is certainly shortened up, hasn't it, folks? We are Monday through Wednesday now. And today is, did I say the date? It is the 16th of February in the year 2005. I've got a couple of items here that I want to share with you on the draft, which has been our topic this week. I wasn't able to get a hold of Wayne. I tried him several times today, and for a while I was getting a fax, and then after that I was getting a busy. So it's you and me tonight, folks. Our spiritual message is from the book by Mary Baker Eddy. I am not a Christian Scientist, and I don't know a whole lot about it, but this is beautiful. I have read it to you before. This is about prayer. And I'll do this. It's just a few paragraphs. This is beautiful. What are the motives for prayer? Do we pray to make ourselves better or to benefit those who hear us, to enlighten the infinite, or to be heard of men? Are we benefited by praying? Yes, the desire which goes forth, hungering after righteousness, is blessed of our Father, and it does not return unto us void. God is not moved by the breath of praise to do more than he has already done, nor can the infinite do less than bestow all good, since he is unchanging wisdom and love. Unchanging. We can do more for ourselves by humble, fervent petitions, but the all-loving does not grant them simply on the ground of lip service, for he already knows all. Prayer cannot change the science of being, but it tends to bring us into harmony with it. Goodness attains the demonstration of truth. A request that God will save us is not all that is required. The mere habit of pleading with the divine mind, as one pleads with the human being, perpetuates the belief in God as humanly circumscribed, an error which impedes spiritual growth. God is love. Can we ask him to be more? God is intelligence. Can we inform the infinite mind of anything he does not already comprehend? Do we expect to change perfection? This is the part that we're coming to right now, folks, that we should really listen to carefully. Shall we plead for more at the open fount which is pouring forth more than we accept? Shall we plead for more at the open fount which is pouring forth more than we accept? That's something to ponder, isn't it? And the way I see it, actually I had talked about this, and it's the reason Nan de Gravel sent me the book, because in this prayer, this little portion on prayer, is exactly what I had realized several years ago, and these little revelations come to us, and you just know that it is so. And one of the things that I do know is that all of the blessings of our Creator have been bestowed upon us. And until we really know that, until we really know it and stop being anxious, worried, concerned, and begin to say thank you, be grateful for all of the blessings that we are enjoying. And if you have a roof over your head, and if you have clothes on your back, and if you have food on the table, what more could we ask? And when we begin to say thank you, when we begin to become truly grateful, not just give lip service, but be grateful, I believe that opens the door is always open. We close it by our anxiety, by our fear, by our concern. And when we let go of that, it leaves that opening for the blessings to flow in. And do I live that as I am speaking it right now all the time? No. No. And that is my desire. To always keep that in mind. Always keep that in mind. And it is my desire for all of you, my dear and kind and generous listeners and open-minded listeners. I want to, first I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I've got this speech here by Rabbi Rabinovich. And before, I only had a little excerpt of it, and I could never find the entire speech. Didn't know if it actually took place. And, of course, we weren't there, so we still don't know. This is reportedly given before a special meeting of the Emergency Council of European Rabbis in Budapest, Hungary, January 12, 1952. Rabbi Rabinovich. And it says at the end of this, folks, that this address by Rabbi Rabinovich was published in the U.S. publication Common Sense and republished in the September 1952 of the Canadian Intelligence Service. Every statement made by Rabinovich is based on the agenda contained in the Protocols of Zion. And here's the speech. It's not real long. Greetings, my children. You have been called here to recapitulate the principal steps of our new program. As you know, we had hoped to have 20 years between wars to consolidate the great gains which we made from World War II, but our increasing numbers in certain vital areas is arousing opposition to us, and we must now work with every means at our disposal to precipitate World War III within 5 years. Well, they're a little behind schedule, aren't they, folks? Within 5 years? Although the groundwork has been laid for World War III for, well, actually millennia probably, but certainly we know since World War I, way before that. He said, the goal for which we have striven so concertedly for 3,000 years is at last within our reach. And because its fulfillment is so apparent, it behooves us to increase our efforts and our caution tenfold. I can safely promise you that before 10 years have passed, our race will take its rightful place in the world, with every Jew a king and every Gentile a slave. And it says here in parentheses, applause from the gathering. You remember the success of our propaganda campaign during the 30s, which aroused anti-American passions in Germany. At the same time, we were arousing anti-German passions in America, a campaign which culminated in the Second World War. A similar propaganda campaign is now being waged intensively throughout the world. A war fever is being worked up in Russia by an incessant anti-American barrage, while a nationwide anti-communist scare is sweeping America. The campaign is forcing all the smaller nations to choose between the partnership of Russia or an alliance with the United States. Our most pressing problem at the moment, remember this was in 1952, folks, our most pressing problem at the moment is to inflame the lagging militaristic part of the Americans. We must inflame the lagging militaristic spirit, Our most pressing problem at the moment is to inflame the lagging militaristic spirit of the Americans. The failure of the Universal Military Training Act was a great setback to our plans, but we are assured that a suitable measure will be rushed through Congress immediately after the 1952 elections. Wasn't that Dwight Eisenhower in 52, folks? The terrible Swedish Jew, as he was called in his yearbook, I think it was at West Point, the terrible Swedish Jew Eisenhower. So he's talking here. He mentions the Universal Military Training Act. Wouldn't it be interesting to see what that was, if something like that did pass, or if there is something in the records that the Universal Military Training Act was actually introduced. He goes on. He says the Russian, as well as the Asiatic people, are well under control and offer no objections to war. But we must wait to secure the Americans. This we hope to do with the issue of anti-Semitism. Listen closely. This we hope to do with the issue of anti-Semitism, which worked so well in uniting the Americans against Germany. We are counting heavily on reports of anti-Semitic outrages in Russia to whip up indignation in the United States and produce a front of solidarity against the Soviet power. You know, a few years ago, I was getting emails where there were newspaper reports that anti-Semitism had raised its ugly head again in Russia, folks. He goes on, he says, simultaneously, to demonstrate to Americans the reality of anti-Semitism, we will advance through new sources, large sums of money to outspokenly anti-Semitic elements in America to increase their effectiveness, and we shall stage anti-Semitic outbreaks in several of their largest cities. This will serve the double purpose of exposing reactionary sectors in America, which then can be silenced, and of welding the United States into a devoted anti-Russian unit. Within 5 years, this program will achieve its objective. The Third World War, which will surpass in destruction all previous contests. Israel, of course, will remain neutral. And when both sides are devastated and exhausted, we will arbitrate, sending our control commissions into all wrecked countries. This war will end for all time our struggles against the Gentiles. We will openly reveal our identity. We will openly reveal our identity with the races of Asia and Africa. I can state with assurance that the last generation of white children is now being born. Our control commission will, in the interest of peace and wiping out interracial tensions, forbid the whites to mate with whites. The white women must cohabit with members of the dark races, the white men with black women. Thus, the white race will disappear. For mixing the dark with the white means the end of the white man, and our most dangerous enemy will become only a memory. Is it? Do you know what made me get back to this, folks? Because Alan and I were talking, I guess it was yesterday, and I remembered reading this, and I pulled it up because we were talking about this the last Thursday that Alan was on, and the white race, and why I have never been able to figure out why do they want to eliminate the white race. And as Alan was pointing out to us, that all of the elite down throughout the centuries, millennia maybe, have been the white skinned, many of them red haired, so-called gods. And if the white race is in that bloodline, which it stands to reason it is, well, then as Alan said, besides the intelligence of the white race, the fact that the white man has always been the greatest, most industrious worker bee, and they've outlived their usefulness now. But it appears that one of the main reasons would be because of the possibility, the probability of the resistors against this plan for world dominion. So he says that having the whites mixing with the dark means the end of the white man, and our most dangerous enemy will become only a memory. We shall embark upon an era of 10,000 years of peace and plenty, the Pax Judaica, and our race will rule undisputed over the world. Our superintelligence will easily enable us to retain mastery over a world of dark peoples. And a question here from the gathering. Rabbi Rabinovich, what about the various religions after the Third World War? And Rabinovich responded, there will be no more religions. Not only would the existence of a priest class remain a constant danger to our rule, but belief in an afterlife would give spiritual strength to irreconcilable elements in many countries and enable them to resist us. Belief in an afterlife would give spiritual strength. He said, we will, however, retain the rituals and the customs of Judaism as the mark of our hereditary ruling caste, strengthening our racial laws so that no Jew will be allowed to marry outside our race, and nor will any stranger be accepted by us. He said, we may have to repeat the grim days of World War II, when we were forced, listen to this, to let the Hitlerite bandits sacrifice some of our people in order that we may have adequate documentation and witnesses to legally justify our trial and execution of the leaders of America and Russia as war criminals after we have dictated the peace. I am sure you will need little preparation for such a duty, for sacrifice has always been the watchword of our people, and the death of a few thousand Jews in exchange for world leadership is indeed a small price to pay. If you're a Jew and you're listening to this, I wonder what that makes you feel like. To convince you of the certainty of that leadership, let me point out to you why, how we have turned all of the inventions of the white man into weapons against him. His printing presses and radios are the mouthpieces of our desires, and his heavy industry manufactures the instruments which he sends out to arm Asia and Africa against him. Our interests in Washington are greatly extending the 0.4 program for developing industry in backward areas of the world, so that after the industrial plants and cities of Europe and America are destroyed by atomic warfare, the whites can offer no resistance against the large masses of the dark races who will maintain an unchallenged technological superiority. And so, with the vision of world victory before you, go back to your countries and intensify your good work until that approaching day when Israel will reveal herself in all her glorious destiny as the light of the world. And that's all there is here, folks. You're very quiet. Sometimes I hear you listening. I sense you're listening and pondering. And here's this is an item by an individual named Amir Gibran. He is a Palestinian living in Jordan. He left the U.S. 1 year ago after being jailed and harassed by the Department of Homeland Security for speaking and organizing in the Boston area in defense of Palestinian rights. And there is a website here, or not a website, but an email address where he can be reached. It's titled USGI's Lied to, Used, and Losing. He says, I'm surprised that the forces are not using airlifting C-130 airplanes to avoid ground transportation, which is costing us about 100 soldiers every month. Oh, excuse me. This is not the person who wrote it. This is a quote. Let me start it over so we're clear here. This is a quote by Commanding Colonel John Jumpier of the U.S. Air Force during a press conference in December. Okay, this is his quote. He said, I am surprised that the forces are not using airlifting C-130 airplanes to avoid ground transportation, which is costing us about 100 soldiers every month. And the author says about 2,000 military convoys must use the Iraqi highways to supply the spread out U.S. forces with water, food, fuel, and other essential supplies. Jumpier said, quote, it will not be efficient to serve our troops, but it's a chance to save some lives. And he added, I know that there will be an increase in the chances of getting these slow and low altitude flying C-130 shot down, but it's a risk that we should take, end quote. A first look at this statement, and one would conclude correctly that it is a very dangerous situation on the ground for U.S. occupying forces. Their lack of control inside the cities of Iraq is now matched by their lack of control over the highways between them. When U.S. military leaders have to decide which deadly option to choose from, it reflects a tone of despair where the safety of the troops is no longer an important issue. No one is able to define the mission of the troops in Iraq or for how long this mission will last. No one at all, including George W. Bush, can explain the U.S. strategy in Iraq. This is because there is no strategy. With the Iraqi resistance raging, it isn't not clear why the U.S. is occupying this country and why the U.S. is so willing to sacrifice its soldiers there. While news sources are divided between either concealing or exaggerating the number of those killed in Iraq, other important statistics about U.S. soldiers are forgotten. These statistics give a shocking picture about the truth of what is happening in Iraq. For example, CBS's 60 Minutes reported last fall that 300 soldiers migrated to Canada when they received orders to join their units heading to Iraq. 60 Minutes went on to say that 5,500 U.S. soldiers had deserted for fear of being killed in Iraq. Some refused to join units leaving for Iraq, but most of them escaped after arriving in Iraq by fleeing to neighboring countries such as Turkey and Jordan. As one soldier stated, quote, "They deceived us when they described our mission to Iraq as a walk in the park." He said, "I took off so that they won't write on my grave, 'Deceived dead GI in Iraq.'" Smuggling American GIs is a, that's end quoting. Smuggling American GIs is a booming business in Iraq these days. For $1,000 and his or her weapon and uniform, any U.S. soldier can get him or herself out of Iraq through Kurdistan. Last April, a female U.S. soldier was captured by the Kurds, allies of the U.S., dressed like a Kurdish woman with a face veil, attempting to cross into Turkey. According to the New York Times, a Pentagon study revealed that one in every six soldiers who served in Iraq requires immediate psychological treatment. Over a million soldiers have served in Iraq and Afghanistan in the last 2 years. Stephen Robinson, a New York Times military expert, believes that the number needing treatment could jump from one to three soldiers in every six. He said, "There is a train loaded with people who need help that will be coming to town for the next 35 years. These figures are the worst for the U.S. since the Vietnam War. Operation Iraqi Freedom was supposed to be short and swift. Soldiers were promised that it would be an easy victory and that we'd be home in time for the summer of 2003. Instead, urban fighting like that in the city of Fallujah, last November, which provided unlimited possibilities for resistance hideouts, booby-trapped houses, and roads full of roadside bombs, put U.S. soldiers in the position of having to live every single minute of the day in fear of an attack. In addition, seeing Iraqis and not being able to distinguish who is a friend and who is an enemy causes severe anxiety to soldiers." Paul Rakov, commander of a Florida National Guard platoon who served in Iraq for 14 months, said, quote, "that the enemy is everywhere in every street, looking at you from every window, in every alley. One cannot think straight because of nerve-wracking fear," end quote. Frightened troops, lacking both certainty about their mission and a strong conviction about what they're doing, often end up committing war crimes, such as killing prisoners or injured people. They see in these crimes an opportunity to get even with their enemy. Racism combines with fear to make this killing possible. It then becomes important to win acceptance among other soldiers to justify the crimes. The poor training and poor education of these soldiers also stands in the way of reason and critical thinking. They learn to copy existing models of behavior without a code of ethics or outside authority to prevent violations of rules of warfare. Even those soldiers who are not convinced that it is okay to commit war crimes find it hard to resist. Both the political and military leadership of the U.S. forces are directly responsible for providing a large-scale cover-up of these crimes. Soldiers are subjected to an emotional extortion known as Uniform Code of Loyalty and Secrecy. Furthermore, the political strength of the U.S. is used to provide immunity for these soldiers from an international war crimes tribunal. This leads to normalizing the criminal behavior of servicemen who know that they can act with impunity. Caught in frenzy of mass killing, most soldiers develop psychological stress and mental trauma as a result of serving in Iraq. Folks, we're going to take a 60-second break here, and we'll be back. And I'll finish this. And tonight, I'm going to accept your calls if you'd like to call in when we're done with this. Feels like a nightmare, sounds like a nightmare, doesn't it, folks? Hope you put your pen in your hand so you can take my address down. If you'd like to support this broadcast, keep it coming to you.
Going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first, and on satellite to Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
All right, we're back, folks. Let me give you the address one more time, just in case you didn't get it. It is Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. I heard from a couple of our listeners today and said that last night the broadcast was nice and clear and it wasn't muffled. I told you that I had spoken with Constance, with the engineer, and asked her to please be aware and attentive to whatever adjustments need to be made, because Alan said that as he was listening, what he realized is it was all base on Tuesday night or Monday night, and I had intentionally replayed our broadcast with Wayne Blanchard, because when he was on with us the week before, I heard from listeners who weren't able to hear the broadcast well, and it was so important. I wanted you to hear it, and folks, I don't need, of course, to hear from hundreds of people, but if there is a problem, I'm going to see if there's a way. If the reception on shortwave is muffled, and it sounds like I'm overmodulating, which I am not. I don't kiss the mic while I'm talking, and I do watch the voice levels. The volume voice level on my indicator here, but I'm going to see if there's a way that we could get through to WWCR to one of the engineers during the broadcast if it is coming in terrible. I'm glad you're with us tonight, and I didn't think to call at 7 o'clock is when the nighttime engineers come on. I was just assuming it would be Constance, but I do know there are a couple of different engineers that handle the broadcast at WWCR. I'm going to pick up this, what I've been reading to you, and this is as I mentioned in the beginning, a Palestinian. It says Amer, A-M-E-R, Jubran, J-U-B-R-A-N, Jubran. He is a Palestinian living in Jordan. He left the U.S. 1 year ago after being jailed and harassed by the Department of Homeland Security for speaking and organizing in the Boston area in defense of Palestinian rights. If any of you would like to have his email address, get your pen in your hand. It's his name, A.M. as in Mary, E.R., J.U.B. as in boy, or Bravo, J.U.B.R.A.N., Emer Jubran, at MSN.com. M. Mary Sam Nancy, MSN.com, if you would like to write to him. I'm going to start that last paragraph all over. It says, caught in frenzy of mass killing. Most soldiers develop psychological stress and mental trauma as a result of serving in Iraq. This stress, predictably, has been taken out on defenseless Iraqi civilians. Many Iraqis are killed every day simply because U.S. soldiers suspected that they were resistance members. The horrific stories about U.S. soldiers executing wounded Iraqis or sexually assaulting Iraqi prisoners reveal the severe psychological conditions that U.S. troops are living under. They're barbarians. They're becoming barbarians. And folks, I want you to think about this. This situation over in Iraq is no accident. If there is no plan, no exit plan, no strategy, think about all of the young men and women who are getting killed off. And isn't that part of the program? Isn't that part of the program? You just believe it, that it is all by design. Upon finishing service in Iraq, I'm back to this article. Upon finishing service in Iraq, these soldiers will no longer have Iraqis to murder at will. The weapons they were trained to use will be left behind. These two things, without their knowing it, had become important in their lives. Without them, their return to U.S. society, where there is little social support, will often mean poverty, alcohol, drugs, domestic violence, divorce, and suicide. In order not to face themselves the lies they were told and the crimes they committed, these soldiers will return to what they learned in Iraq: crime, drug trafficking, prostitution, rape, armed robbery, child abuse, racism, and rallying around the flag. The government of the U.S. will then have to engage in another massive cover-up. This time it will be to avoid admitting any responsibility for the psychological illness of its servicemen and for providing no resources to treat them. Damaged soldiers will become a supply of felons to the U.S. justice system, which long ago stopped caring about any kind of social justice. The justice system will in turn deliver the veterans to the prison system, the U.S.'s largest growth industry. Think about this. They've privatized the prisons. And we talk about slave labor over in China, folks, which there is. What do you think it is in the prisons? I think when they work, they get about 50 cents an hour or something like that to put in some type of an account, or maybe to spend on their necessities or whatever. But that's why there are so many white-collar criminals today. They are good worker bees. They behave themselves. They're not rabble-rousers. They want to get the hell out of prison. And they stay out of trouble, and they work. And the goods that are being produced in the privatized prisons today are being sold at great profits to the corporations that own the prisons. I want to read that last sentence to you again. He said, in order to not to face themselves the lies they were told and the crimes they committed, these soldiers will return to what they learned in Iraq: crime, drug trafficking, prostitution, rape, armed robbery, child abuse, racism, and rallying around the flag. Oh, that wasn't the one. I'm up one. I'm sorry. Damaged soldiers will become a supply of felons to the U.S. justice system, which long ago stopped caring about any kind of social justice. The justice system will in turn deliver the veterans to the prison system, the U.S.'s largest growth industry. Information about the number of U.S. casualties in Iraq is available on the website of the Pentagon, a building which some are now calling the War Hub. This information covers only those who are officially U.S. citizens enlisted with different military services, hired security contractors or mercenaries, and recruits who are not citizens who enlisted to obtain a green card are not counted or mentioned. A large number of the green card recruits are from Mexico and Central America. There are no organizations to look after their rights or help them once they're in Iraq. Most of them are buried in Iraq when killed. A videotape produced and distributed by the... I'm not even going to try to pronounce that. In Fallujah, one of the most important military wings of the Iraqi resistance, showed a burial site discovered outside the Iraqi city of Samarra with tens of, there's a word missing here, I believe, bodies in U.S. military body bags. The dead were dressed in U.S. uniforms. It is estimated that as many as 40% of the U.S. troops serving in Iraq are green card recruits. The website of the Pentagon divides the casualties in Iraq into three categories. One, combat casualties, 1,300 dead, 9,000 injured since March 2003. Both figures are false. Two, non-combat casualties. The site does not report how many of these were injured or killed. Last fall, 60 Minutes concluded that the figure could be around 3,000 killed and over 25,000 injured. And three, coalition casualties. Information under this category was posted briefly and then deleted. The figure showed 750 killed and 1,034 injured. It is not clear who these people were. If they were, quote, coalition forces, then why are their countries not claiming them? The U.S. government has gained a reputation of systematically lying to its population and the rest of the world. But a few facts about Iraq are emerging despite efforts to conceal them. Political stability and security in Iraq is non-existent. This goes to the heart of the claimed U.S. goal in Iraq. The U.S. justified its removal by military means of Saddam as a way to create a better and more stable country. Instead, Iraqis are caught in poverty, hunger, and terrible violence every day as a direct result of U.S. forces. Iraq is not a better place today, as Tony Blair and George Bush have claimed. And after Fallujah, no one any longer believes the U.S. is trying to bring freedom to the Iraqis. When it mentions here removing Saddam Hussein, in case you weren't listening when we've mentioned this, folks, that guy that we see, I cannot say it isn't Saddam Hussein. I'm asserting that the probability that it isn't Hussein is great. And there are two things going on here. They found him in December, allegedly, and they've got an op-ed photo. It's on our website, by the way, in the Iraq section, if you want to look at it. It's titled, the article is, the title is entitled, Saddam Hussein Was Not Captured, or something like that. And the fact, there are two items. That one, the photo op, was the most important one, because there was a tree, a palm tree, behind the two soldiers, with the one holding the cover open on the rat hole, allegedly, where they said that Saddam Hussein had been holed up for 3 months. Well, behind them, as this was supposed to have happened in December, but there was a palm tree, and it explained that the dates are when they first are forming and and developing, they're yellow. And in the summertime, they're yellow. And then as the fall comes, they begin to shrivel and turn darker. And then by the time winter comes, they're all done. They're gone. And we've all seen the dates. And this picture shows a palm tree with globs of yellow dates on the tree behind them, allegedly in December, when it could not have been. In fact, the title, I think, of the article is Palm Trees Do Not Lie. Another thing to consider, Saddam Hussein was graying, and it was well known that he dyed his hair. And the guy that they showed us on CNN, and I'm sure all the news networks, over and over and over and over again, had black hair right to the roots of his head. The beard was gray, had gray in it, but the hair was pitch black. And it was noted by somebody, and they said, what did they do? Give him a dye job? If he was in there for 3 months, his gray roots would have been showing. So just to keep that straight in your mind, they're talking about Saddam's trial and all that. You know, it is true. I mean, we can't believe anything we see. We can't believe anything we hear. Makes you wonder why we keep talking, doesn't it? All right, here's another bullet. It says that great lie, the, quote, war on terrorism, has failed to crush what the U.S. calls international terrorism. U.S. citizens are not safer today than they were on September 11, 2001. In fact, the most powerful force in the U.S., its military machine, is now completely vulnerable to lethal attacks by the ever-growing Iraqi resistance. Normally, the military is established to defend or attack those labeled enemies of the state. In the case of the U.S., its military is designed to twist the arms of those who do not agree with its imperial agenda. The U.S. is clearly involved in practicing terrorism by military means to achieve its strategic interests everywhere around the globe. Well, let's get that straight, folks. I believe those are Israel's strategic interests, aren't they? And it is very accurate to say today, to refer to the U.S. government incorporated as ZOG. It is a Zionist-occupied government. We have been taken over. This is almost finished here. But in Iraq, the mighty U.S. military with over 150,000 well-armed troops is very nervous and suffers from low morale, and in the eyes of the world has lost the moral edge. Furthermore, the war is not a well-supported cause in the U.S. This time, the risk of getting killed in Iraq is real. This time, the enemy is real. The U.S. public must decide on supporting a policy of war that is killing their own children and the Iraqi people, or fighting against the war by taking drastic measures, measures that go beyond vigils and feel-good political demonstrations. We may be sure that if what we are told about Iraq by the U.S. government does not look good, the actual truth must be a great deal worse. The truth about Iraq is that, quote, the mighty U.S. GIs are just not so mighty. That's the end of that item, folks. You can call in if you'd like to. The call-in number, we've got about 8-9 minutes left. The call-in number is 570-537-3025. 570-537-3025. I'd like to hear from you. And until somebody decides that you'd like to call, here's a short item from, actually it was on the military.com news content. Army's troop sources are depleted. This was January 16, 2005, from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The Army may not be scraping the bottom of the manpower barrel yet, but critics say the service is coming dangerously close. Defense analysts and veterans advocates say that the Army's renewed efforts to encourage retired soldiers to return to active duty is an indication it is being stretched thin and worn out. Lauren Thompson, a defense analyst with the Lexington Institute, a Washington think tank, was quoted as saying the Army basically has run out of options. Steve Robinson, exclusive executive director of the National Gulf War Resource Center, a veterans advocacy group in Washington, said the Army is now dipping into its last pool of resources. The only thing they have left is the draft, said Robinson, a former Army Ranger. That phone made me jump. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Jackie. How you doing?
I'm fine.
This is Clayton from St. Louis again.
Hi, Clay. You don't have to yell, honey. You're coming in loud and clear.
Oh, I am. Oh, okay.
Really well.
Sorry about that. You're coming in crystal clear on 5070.
Oh, that is just wonderful. Maybe they've made the necessary adjustments. How are you, Clayton?
Oh, just another day in the New World Order, Jackie.
I know it.
I was glad you said some of the things you did. You know, it's really discouraging to see our, you know, young men and women being used by the Zionist occupied government.
It's heartbreaking, Clayton.
And it's, you know, what people don't, most people don't seem to understand is that it's going to get worse. We're flying spy missions over Iran.
Yep.
We're making noises at Syria. We've withdrawn our ambassador. So this war is probably going to expand pretty soon.
Yes, and you know the one thing that with this draft that doesn't leave my mind is the statement that Kerry made when they were campaigning. Of course, Bush just said there will be no draft. Kerry said there will be no draft when I am president unless we are attacked. And if there's a big enough standoff about the draft and if enough people wake up and you know, there it seems that there are quite a few people who are not registering, Clayton. What do you think they're going to do, honey? They're going to see to it that, quote, we're attacked, don't you think?
Oh, well, that's, yes, that's for sure.
And not, this isn't to be a downer, and it isn't to put a fear in people, because, you know, for us to be afraid of something that is way out there, or maybe tomorrow, or maybe tonight, but it is not now, but to be afraid worry about it, it doesn't change anything. That's why I think it's so important that we get our own house in order. I mean, our own hearts, our own minds.
Right.
You know what I'm saying, Clay?
Yeah.
That's why we spend so much time on spiritual issues here. Not religion, but spiritual issues, honey.
Right. Well, I claim Psalm 91 every day.
And
for all you Christians, you might want to go to that chapter and read it and claim it for yourself, because it is for the days that we're living in right now, perilous times. And you know what bothers me? I guess what bothers me the most, Jackie, is you and I and other people can see so clearly what has happened to our once great nation and the darkness and the evil that has taken over and taken control. And there are others, and I hear them on shortwave and other places, where they are, I don't know if they're in denial or what it is, that they don't want to accept the truth that we do have a Zionist-occupied government, and
yep,
these people do plan on having a new world order with the capital in Jerusalem, and they are going to be the ruling class. I mean,
do you have internet access?
Yeah.
Have you seen that court building in Israel?
I've heard that it's Masonic and occultic in nature.
Well, it's I would imagine that is intended to be the world court, Yeah, it is Masonic. They've got actual photographs. You could put that probably in a search engine and take a look at it. It's just unreal.
Yeah.
It's a monolith. Is that what you call it?
Yeah, that's it.
It's just unbelievable.
There's a website you might want to go to. You get a chance at jewatch.com, JEWWATCH.
Jewatch. Yeah, you know what? I've been very aware of that for a long time, and I've never been over there to look.
You know, the guy who is the master of that website, he's here in St. Louis. I used to stay in touch with him a lot, but he was in so much hot water, and I was getting in hot water, too, that we kind of lost touch with each other because of the hot water we were both in.
Uh-huh.
And it was over the same thing because we were revealing the truth of what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And if for people, these people have, I don't mean to make these people sound invincible, but they have a lot of power and clout, and they know how to use it.
The ADL.
Yep. Yep. They've got the media, the print, and the TV, and I mean
entertainment, education, economic,
the Christians,
everything.
Yeah, they've got these Christian brainwashed, chosen people.
Here, listen to this. This is something I like. Alan and I were talking about this one time. In fact, we were talking about Orwell's 1984, and I said I could not figure out why they tortured and tortured and tortured Winston Smith, to get him to say, yes, yes, I see, three fingers and whatever.
Right.
But then they killed him. And I said, why didn't they just kill him first? He said, because they've got this twisted code. Listen to this. I think this is important. First of all, they admit that this plan has been underway for 3,000 years. And probably even longer, but they've never made it, Clayton. They've never made it. And what Alan said is that they have this twisted, well, if they're going to be gods on Earth, everyone has to come willingly. Because if they're going to emulate creation, we are free will spirits. It is our choices, the decisions that we make, that bring us closer to consciousness of our Father or further into the materialistic world. And if they have one holdout, they haven't made it. So, you going to hold out, Clay?
To my last breath.
Me too, honey.
They're not going to make it because I've read the scriptures and I understand what their final destiny is going to be. And I would not want to be in their shoes for anything.
Yeah. Well, I'll be interested. Alan has been writing on his book on an interpretation, the Masonic symbolic interpretation of Revelations. And so, you know, we just need to be careful and know that the book has been totally tampered with, Clayton. And words have been put in there and et cetera. Honey, we're out of time. Thank you for calling in.
God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Folks, we are out of time tonight. We'll be back with you Monday. Alan is coming on with us, given any unforeseen circumstances. And I hope you have a delightful next 4 days. I'll see you Monday. And God bless you. Thank you for being here. And thank you, those of you who are supporting this podcast. Thank you. And please forgive my lack of...
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast...